following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK. What is on your mind about firearms today? It is another great day in Fairbanks. They're all great days. The sun's sort of out. Temperature is 9 degrees. We're having a warm spell. And here at the KFAR broadcasting station, Melissa Burnett is expertly running the board for us. Thank you, Melissa. And she keeps the archives up to date. So if you miss a program, it should be accessible in the archives within a couple of days. So what is on our agenda today? I will spend most of the hour discussing red dot sights and practice distances using information from American Handgunner Magazine and the Lucky Gunner website. This is a continuation of several sessions on red dots, also commonly called MRDS, miniature red dot sights. If you missed last week, Chuck Indereden was our guest talking about red dot sights. That was a continuation of his November 10th, 2022 discussion concerning the dot sight. So if you missed last week or the November 10th program, Chuck's discussion is well worth finding in the Shooter's Corner archives. Now, I also have a few articles I'd like to discuss today. The first is about a Pennsylvania boy accidentally shot by his younger brother, and that is about safety. The second concerns two letters to the Newsminer editor dated December 17 and December 25, 2022, one negative to guns and the other explaining why our Second Amendment is important. And third, and likely not all in this order, is a longer discussion from articles explaining Oregon's new Measure 114 passed November 2022 and titled The Reduction of Gun Violence Act. And what I don't get to today, I'll finish next week because to me, it's all important. And next week, I'll talk more about dot sights, the MRDS, and if I have time, I'll begin my review of Aaron Cowan's from Sage Dynamics most recent white paper, Miniaturized Red Dot Systems for Duty Handgun Use. And if not, I'll start that the following week. In Aaron Cowan's foreword, he notes that the document, quote, is available publicly and may be used for justification, policy, and or research purposes so long as it is cited in its entirety without modification or editing and credit is given to the original author, unquote. And I hope to point out helpful information in Mr. Cowan's research and what you can find in the white paper that may help you evaluate red dot systems and how those systems may help us. And Mr. Cowan has put this research out for all of us to access easily. And because to understand the whole picture, I think you really do need to read most of it in its entirety. So if you want the whole picture of this research, please go to his website. It's sagedynamics.org, and that is sagedynamics.org, O-R-G, not C-O-M. And halfway down the page, you'll find the PDF of his white paper, and you can download it and read it yourself. Okay, in 2 weeks, on January 19, I would like to start my book review on Jack Hinson's One Man War, A Civil War Sniper by Tom C. McKinney. And the time period in this book is going to be the Civil War. And the book is about a wealthy plantation owner in the South who was neutral politically. Okay, got that out. He befriended both his Confederate and Union generals as friends, but a terrible event changed his thinking. And he became a very famous sniper while he was seeking revenge. And again, this book is titled Jack Hinson's One Man War, A Civil War Sniper by Tom C. McKinney, in case you want to read it ahead of time or read along with my presentations. Got a few announcements. Chuck Indereden's next Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes are February 11 and 12 and March 25 and 26. Sign up at mylegalheat.com. Under classes, type in your zip code and Chuck's class dates will come up. or visit Chuck's website, c4traininggroup.com. Sign up to the link at his website. Then on January 21st and 22nd will be Chuck's new class, Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen. And I think this is going to be a great class. So take this opportunity to sharpen your shooting skills and learn more about situational awareness and scenario-based decision-making for self-defense with a firearm. Now, another of Chuck's important classes coming up is March 12th, Red Dot Transition Course, and that's going to be held at TVSA. Call Chuck at 844-966-4079 for more information, or just go to his website, c4traininggroup.com, and sign up. I think this Red Dot Transition Course will probably fill up pretty quickly. And think about signing up with a friend. It's always fun to take a class with a friend. And next announcement, Glenn Miller's popular Miller's Action Speed Shooting event, MASS, M-A-S-S, is this weekend. Go to MASS on Saturday, January 7th at the Fish and Game Range. And this week will be Center Fire Guns. New shooters shoot free and juniors always shoot free. What, that's great for a family. So they start at 10 a.m. and they normally finish about noon. So go to practicescore.com and sign up for Miller's Action Speed Shooting. And if you have questions, you can call Glenn at 907-347-1396. And I left the best for last. January 26th, Colonel Montana, Kid Hammer, and Barlow, our esteemed Golden Heart Shooter Society cowboys, will be on Shooter's Corner, and I know there will be some cowboy gun talk and more. Okay, moving on. Now, two letters to the editor in the News Miner caught my eye. One dated December 19, 2022, titled, Our Love of Guns is the Problem. The second is the answer and rebuttal to that letter dated December 25, 2022, titled, It's More Than Just Our Love of Guns. And I don't want to give out the names of the authors, but you can find these letters easily enough in the News Miner online. The first gentleman is expressing his belief that our love of guns is the problem. He referenced the Uvalde, Texas shooting, and I want to read one paragraph in that letter. Quote, the NRA has promoted an argument that good people with guns will win out over bad people with guns. If you look back at the record, there are practically no cases where the good people with guns have rarely prevented any violence by the bad people, so their argument is simply not true. I believe that the more guns in society, the more likely disasters will occur, unquote. And I read one sentence in that paragraph over and over, wondering if the writer knew what he was saying. And sometimes when we're emotional about an issue, the words just don't come out right. He said, if you look at the record, there are practically no cases where the good people with guns have rarely prevented any violence by bad people, rarely prevented. Practically no cases, rarely prevented. And I think he meant to say the good people with the guns are not having the effect on the bad people with the guns. But by writing practically no cases where the good people with guns have rarely prevented any violence by the bad people, he in actuality said the opposite. If there are practically no cases where good people with guns rarely prevent, then to me that means there could be many cases where good people with guns frequently prevent violence by bad people. And that's what I think. Now, I realize I'm being particular about semantics and sorting out the writer's original words, but he did use words to reference the NRA to attack the meaning of those words, and he made a summary statement that, in my opinion, cannot be proven. And the way I read it, it reads opposite of his intent. Semantics is the study of reference, meaning, and truth. And when we use words about firearms and our use of firearms, about statistics and about outcomes, we need to be very careful. And later this hour, I will be referencing Guy Smith's book titled Guns and Control, which I reviewed about a year ago. One thing I learned from his book and a few other books on firearms use statistics is that, first, it is extremely difficult to find similar data points. Second, it is difficult to find enough data points to draw a solid conclusion. And third, you can often make your data points say whatever you want them to say. And we're going to go to a break. Stay with us, and I'll finish this around the corner.
Hey, Interior Alaska. It's winter, so it's dark out. Go figure. LED Moose lights literally save lives. At Auto Trim Design, our LED lighting specialists can help you find the best options and sizes for your vehicle. We carry all the lighting you'll need for a safe winter in Alaska, whether it's on your four-wheeler, snow machine, truck, or car. Don't risk your family's life in the dark. Stop by Auto Trim Design today, 2550 South Cushman, to protect yourself for tomorrow.
Life is the road trip we all travel. We're all on that road, moving one direction, forward. Even when road conditions may slow us down, still, we move forward. And the roads improve once again. Arctic RV encourages you, keep moving forward, because the road conditions will improve. Although Arctic RV is closed for the winter, they will reopen Monday, April 3rd. See you this spring. Travel, explore, camp, and enjoy the beautiful Alaska in comfort. Arctic RV, rough it in style.
Weather This Hour brought to you by Long Building Technologies. Make your building the smartest around. Call Long today to find out about their building intelligence systems that will save you money. 561-3044. Or find out more at long.com.
KFAR Weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times
today,
with highs around 6 above. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight. Lows level off around 14 below. Chance of snow tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 1 below. Overcast skies. A dusting of snow Saturday through Saturday night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So getting back to these letters to the editor, a few days after that December 19 letter to the editor titled "Our Love of Guns is a Problem, is the Problem," another gentleman from our community wrote a response on December 25th titled "It's More Than Just Our Love of Guns." And this gentleman appropriately quoted the source of his statistics. He pointed out that armed citizens do use their legal firearms effectively to either protect themselves or prevent otherwise deadly situations. And a quote from his letter, quote, "The founders knew what they were doing when they guaranteed the right of the people to be armed. They also knew how to deal with violent criminals," unquote. And I very much appreciate that that gentleman wrote the rebuttal that he did. I like to see that there are people in our community that understand when we're talking about crime committed with firearms, that well-trained, level-headed armed citizens do make a difference. Now, I'm going to switch subjects here. I'm debating what to talk about, whether I should talk about Oregon's Measure 114, because that has to do with demographics, or go right into red dots. And I think I'm going to go into the red dot discussion because it's a longer discussion, and I can always talk about Oregon next week. Now, I subscribe to many handgun and rifle magazines. And I decided that this coming year, I was going to make more of an effort to highlight some of the articles that I'm reading. Now, the January-February 2023 issue of American Handgunner magazine had information that got me thinking. And I wanted to share those subjects. The discussions revolve around what at what distance should we practice for defensive shooting. Now, last week after the program, I asked Chuck Indereeden at what distance does he have his students practice. In this case, I was talking about his upcoming Red Dot Transition class. And I'm going to let Chuck speak for himself. It's his class and his experience. And if he's listening, he can call in. He knows vastly more about this than I do. So Chuck's practice distance recommendations did make perfect sense to me. But today, I want to provide the thinking from information in American Handgunner, because it was these writings that made me think hard about defensive shooting practice distances. And I believe Chuck Indereeden's practice distances are correct. And now that I know them, I'll change the way I've been practicing. I have been practicing at a distance that I thought an encounter would likely take place. And now I think I've been wrong on that. The distance is not far enough for me, or likely any of us, to perfect our groups, to perfect our fundamentals and our shooting. If you can group at a further distance, you will likely have no problem close up. Setting your target close up really offers not much opportunity for improving your shooting skills. For an encounter in your home, you can measure the furthest distance you might need to shoot an intruder. Maybe that's from your bedroom, down through a long hallway, or from where you think you might be to your front door. These are solid measurements you can take and practice. But outdoors, that's a different story. And most all of us, if we practiced at all, could effectively take an instinctive shot up close or hit a target at 7 to 20 feet. But once you group effectively at 20 feet, that's approximately 7 yards, it's time to get serious about practicing at longer distances. At a longer distance is where you're going to perfect your fundamentals. In addition, you will learn a lot about how you handle your gun, your position, and about your ammunition, because a slight error at 7 to 20 feet is going to be a much larger error at, say, 20 to 40 yards. Now, the fish and game range is a 50-foot range, and I believe TVSA is 2, so you have about 16 and a half yards possible length at those indoor ranges. When you're outdoors in the summer, you might want to move that back a few yards. Now, back to the January-February issue of American Handgunner magazine, the topic is sight distance. In a letter to the editor in this issue, a reader said that most times he reads a review, he finds 25 yards is the standard distance to practice at. But when he reads about defensive shooting in particular, the distance is usually 7 yards for practice. And he's wondering, if one uses lasers, and I'm going to add red dots to this, do those aids really make a difference at 7 yards? And this got me thinking about a couple of issues. And the first is, why are we choosing lasers or dot sights in the first place? What is the benefit to us? And on this first item, Chuck Enderezen has explained much of the practical why on the October 10th and December 29th programs on Shooter's Corner, and you can find those in the archives, in terms of the eye, brain, and some other physical reasons, as well as tests done on various brands of dot sights. And next week, I'll be reviewing Aaron Cowan's, who I already said runs Sage Dynamics, new fourth edition 2021 white paper, which is entitled Miniature Red Dot Systems for Duty Handgun Use. Now, the second issue as it relates to defensive shooting is, at what distance should we be practicing? And I think we sometimes forget the purpose of our visual enhancements on our guns in defensive shooting. I think some of us, and perhaps me included, might not understand the most effective distance to practice at, no matter if we use iron sights or lasers or dot sights. The person at Handgunner magazine who responded to the question also recognized that there are two issues at hand. His answer, quote, "We normally test guns at 25 yards to help discern the mechanical ideal accuracy of a handgun so we all know what it can do," unquote. But then he goes on to say that statistically, most self-defense scenarios are at short ranges. And listeners, that's one of my goals today, to help us define exactly what is meant by short range. He also notes that we are not guaranteed a short range situation. He brings up the Texas West Freeway Church incident, which he notes was about 25 yards. Now, in that incident, it took place December 29, 2019 in Texas. Two people in the church congregation were killed before the gunman was stopped by a gentleman named Jack Wilson. And Jack Wilson was a 71-year-old parishioner who was the head of the church volunteer security team. And Mr. Wilson was also a firearms instructor and a former reserve deputy sheriff in Texas. And I suspect he had substantial practice to have the skills to take out an active shooter in a complicated situation at 25 yards. And by complicated, I mean there were many people in that church congregation room, and Mr. Wilson had to be confident he could take that long shot at 25 yards. So think about it. At 25 yards in a room filled with people, likely many in panic mode, you have to be confident of your shot at that distance. If you miss, you could wound or kill someone in the congregation. you are only going to be confident in your abilities with your specific gun if you practice at those distances. Now, personal attacks may be up close and fast, but mass shootings often take place in a much larger setting with more people in the area and at longer distances. So we were all able to watch the YouTube video of that incident because the church services were being live streamed in real time. And you can find that incident on YouTube. The responder to the letter in the editor in American Handgunner also mentions the Indiana Mall shooting, which was at about 40 or slightly more yards. And I began to question, if you have good eyesight and quality iron sights on your defensive handgun, can you accurately take a clean shot at 25 yards or 40 yards in a stress situation? Well, certainly a practiced shooter, someone who has trained correctly and has the eyesight to do it, could accurately take that longer shot with iron sights. So why do I hear from students and friends that they want a laser or a red dot to make sure they can take that long shot? Why are red dots becoming so popular? The magazine responder notes that, in his opinion, the benefits of red dots or lasers are not so much for those 25 to 40 yard distances, and I might disagree a little bit with that. The lasers and red dots are more for, quote, easier, more rapid, accurate sighting in different conditions. Lasers are great in dark conditions, while optics may help many shooters with less than perfect eyesight, unquote. So let me share my opinion from reading and working with my dot sights, and much of this I learned from Aaron Cowan's white paper as well as Chuck Indereden's discussions. We use dot sights not only for rapid acquisition, but also for allowing us to be target focused. Being target focused is how our eye brain system works. If we stick to iron sights, we will have to train to be front sight focused. We're naturally target focused, and we can move quickly, more quickly, to acquire our target with accuracy using a red dot system. And that's it, pretty much in a nutshell. Now, I'll talk more about the target focused versus front sight focus next week when I get to Aaron Cowan's white paper on the miniature red dot system for duty handgun use. You really should download that PDF. Now, earlier I said that the person in American Handgunner answering the inquiry mentioned that we are not guaranteed a situation where our response would be in short range. So what is short range for practice purposes? And more importantly, what's the average range that we should practice for? What is realistic? And I think there will be a lot of opinions on this. Again, I think Chuck Indereden can lend much clarification on distances for the types of altercations the average person defending themselves might find themselves in. This may well differ from the types of distances practical for the Good Samaritan to attempt to stop a shooting such as a mall shooting. For now, I've pulled some information from sources that I will share with you for the purpose really of getting us to think about this. From a LuckyGunner.com article titled "The True Distance of a Typical Gunfight" by Chris Baker, June 4th, 2021, I learned some practical advice that is new to me. Baker tells us if we rely on statistics to make important decisions, we had better know the statistics are true. Quote, "We've all heard that most gunfights take place at 3 yards. It's part of the old 3 shots, 3 yards, 3 seconds standard. But where does that come from, and is it reliable? Do we have any sources that are more reliable or more specific? We're taking a critical look at the available data to find out what's myth and what's relevant for the average armed citizen for concealed carry," unquote. In this article, Baker embeds an 11-minute, 30-second video, if you'd like to watch it, and I'm taking information from the transcript he provides of that video. The genesis of this information came from a previous video Baker provided to the public about red dots. He was questioned about the relevance of red dots by some people. The original video that prompted this is titled, "Do You Need a Red Dot Sight on Your Carry Pistol?" Now, the first issue that Baker tackles is distance. Now, remember the rules of three I mentioned above. Quote, "The average gunfight involves 3 rounds fired at 3 yards in 3 seconds or less," unquote. Viewers did not agree on those rules of three. Some thought the distance should be more and some less. And I've always thought from my reading that the altercation in which I might use my gun is going to be up close and quick, which I always interpreted to be within a few feet. But I also know about the 21-foot experiment. It is not a rule. It's the time it takes a bad guy with a melee weapon to close in on you versus the time it takes a trained law enforcement officer to be able to effectively respond. And the experiment shows that it takes about 1.5 seconds for the bad guy with a melee incident to close 21 feet, the same amount of time it took a trained law enforcement officer to draw his gun and fire two unaimed shots. Now, a melee weapon is not a firearm, which we all know can be shot at you from quite a distance. A melee weapon is a knife or a bat or a tire arm. It's not a projectile being shot at you. It's not another person with a gun. Now, the bad guy uses the melee weapon in direct physical contact. So we need a reliable statistical basis for distance to at which to expect that we might have to respond to someone who we think will do us bodily harm. And we're going to go to our half-hour break and stay with us because I'll finish this up after the break.
Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings a herd to sleep.
In a bass voice, rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings a raggedy music to the cattle as he swings.
You can now find the legendary KFAR on the FM dial at 97.5.
News. I'm Rich Dennison. Republican leader Kevin McCarthy has again failed to gain enough votes to become House Speaker after a seventh roll call vote, despite several days of negotiations.
On a seventh round of voting, McCarthy was again at 201 votes, short of the 218 needed. 19 others voted for Florida Republican Byron Donalds. Florida's Matt Gaetz cast his votes for former President Trump.
Fox's Jared Halpern on Capitol Hill. McCarthy appears now to have lost an eighth round of voting. South Carolina's Supreme Court has overturned the state's two-year-old so-called heartbeat abortion law, which bans the procedure after about 6 weeks of pregnancy.
The court rules the six-week time frame is an unreasonable one to expect women to adhere to. The state's existing ban for 20 weeks now stands.
Fox's Eben Brown. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports that Alaskan voters approved the legalization of marijuana in 2014, but uncertainty still remains as to how driving under the influence is enforced. According to the Department of Public Health, driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal and unsafe, but there is no legal limit set for impairment. Matsu Borough Assembly members Tim Yale and Rob Yunt co-sponsored Resolution 23-004 at Tuesday's regular assembly meeting. The resolution asked the state of Alaska to adopt a standard for operating a vehicle while under the influence of THC. Though it did pass during the assembly's meeting, it is not necessarily a guarantee that lawmakers will address it during the legislative session. It's symbolic in a way, but it does let the legislature, our legislators, know what we want, Hale said. It also gives some direction to our lobbyists who work off that list as far as trying to accomplish things. Jesse Sumner, who represents House District 28 in Juneau, spoke against the resolution, saying we're asking to criminalize something that, to my knowledge, is not a large
streaming
problem.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
When you know the person who works on your car or truck, that's worth something. It gives a level of confidence that's hard to come by. That's Rogers Auto Repair. Family-owned and operated, Rogers is your complete automotive repair shop. Tune-ups, winterizing, even engine and transmission rebuilds are all done right in their shop on Dale Road near the airport. So call the folks with experience and a sound reputation. Call Rogers Auto Repair. You'll be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
Ice fishing is great winter fun, if you're prepared. Now, before you make your fishing hole in the ice, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for everything you need to limit out. Rods to tackle, to ice tents, and ice augers. And Frontier Outfitters has the right winter clothing to keep you toasty warm and dry. Not to mention your license, guns, ammo, and a wide variety of snowshoes. Your next outdoor adventure is waiting for you. It begins at Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
For many of us in interior Alaska, our vehicles are our only transport. At Auto Trim Design, we know how important it is to protect your ride from the environment. Our winters are cold, dark, and slippery. But have no fear, Auto Trim Design is here. With accessories like bumpers, heated seats, remote starts, moose lights, Arctic spray-on bed liners, and much more to protect you, your family, and your vehicle. Stop by today at Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman, to protect your ride from Old Man Winter.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. And if you have any comments on what I'm talking about, feel free to call in. Now, Baker from American Handgunner writes, quote, I'm sorry, from Lucky Gunner writes, quote, so I want to dive into two questions, and this is actually going to end up being two separate videos. Today I want to answer, at what distance do defensive shootings actually take place, and how do we know that? And next time I'll try to answer, at what range do sights become a relevant part of the equation, unquote. And I think this is something that many of us have been thinking about. So let me give you the title of this article again, because I think many of you will want to read it and watch the videos. Go to luckygunner.com or Google the title of the article. It's The True Distance of a Typical Gunfight by Chris Baker, June 4th, 2021. Where does this rule of threes come from? And quoting Baker, the oldest source I've seen for the original quote is from Lieutenant Frank McGee of the NYPD in the 1970s. Today, most people seem to cite the FBI as the source, but the FBI doesn't actually have statistics on defensive shooting by armed citizens. They do track some data about justifiable homicides, which isn't quite the same thing, but that does not include any information about engagement different distance. Local law enforcement agencies don't generally document that kind of thing either, unquote. So Baker tells us that most of the information we have on armed citizen defense distances are from a variety of unofficial sources. He notes that actual engagement statistics usually refer to law enforcement shootings. Quote, the most commonly used source is probably the FBI's report on law enforcement officers killed and assaulted, or LEOKA. That's part of their annual Uniform Crime Report, which collects stats from law enforcement departments all over the country. There is a table in there that shows the distance from the officers to their attackers when they were killed, unquote. Now, Baker includes a graph from this source in his article of the 237 incidents between 2015 and 2019. So let me read you those numbers. 44% of incidences were from 0 to 5 feet. 21% of incidents were 6 feet to 10 feet. 15% of incidents were 11 feet to 20 feet, 8% of incidents were 21 feet to 50 feet, and 12% of the incidents were over 50 feet. If I consolidate for a mental picture, I'm going to consolidate these numbers, 65% of incidences were from 0 to 10 feet, and with more consolidation, 80% of incidents were from 0 to 20 feet. But back to the rule of threes to make the author's point. He notes that on the graph, we know 21% of the incidences were from 6 to 10 feet. And that 6 to 10 feet is roughly 3 yards. So 21% of the incidents would be consistent with the rules of three. Now, if you think about the rules of three means 3 yards or less, then, as I mentioned a minute ago, you would add 0 to 5 feet of 44% and the 6 to 10 feet of 21%. You would have your statistic on the percentage of incidents falling in that rule of threes as 65% of the incidents is 10 feet is 3.3 yards. The thing is, what does this really tell us? We have a statistic of negatives, according to the author. These numbers tell us the distances at which over a 4-year period law enforcement officers were unfortunately killed. Also, we as armed citizens are not tasked the same as law enforcement officers. And Baker tells us that if we want statistics on positive engagement distances in officer-involved shootings, we have to look at data provided by individual law enforcement departments. He chose large departments for his study, the LAPD and the NYPD, and he pulled annual use of force reports. Embedded in the article I'm talking about are links to those LAPD and NYPD reports where you can see the source of information for yourself. The LAPD data is 77 incidents from 2019 to 2012, and the NYPD data is 195 incidents from 2014 through 2019. And this is not a large sample, but he's just trying to make a point. And I know it's difficult to provide numbers and statistics in any depth over the radio. I ran into that problem with my previous discussions on statistics when I review chapters from Guy Smith's book, Guns and Control. So if you have any questions about these statistics, just source Baker's original article. Now, Baker finds when we look at positive outcome engagement distances from the LAPD and NYPD, we find quite different statistics than we found in the FBI's report of negative engagement distances at which officers were killed. Let's talk about positive engagement distances. For the LAPD, there's a relatively even distribution of incidents from 16 feet to 60 feet and over. Only 5.5% of positive engagement distances fall within the 6 to 10 foot range for the LAPD. From the closest distance, 0 to 5 feet, there is only a 6.5% positive engagement. And remember, for the FBI, the percent negative engagements in that 6 to 10 foot range was 21%. And I think the takeaway is that the closer the engagement, the less likely the good guy is to survive. And you simply have less time to react. Now, moving from LAPD to NYPD, their 6 foot to 10 foot statistics are closer to the FBI's. NYPD is 23% positive outcomes, whereas the FBI was 21% negative outcomes in that space, that 6 to 10 foot space. If we wanted to make some sort of general statement from those numbers, we might say that the 6 foot to 10 foot range, in that 6 to 10 foot range, a defender's chances of a positive or negative outcome are about the same, 50-50. And I'm supposing here, perhaps with a mechanical advantage like a dot sight on your guns or the ability to target focus, we can perhaps react quicker and be more precise in that shorter distance. But we can't compare apples to oranges. And this seems to always be a problem with these types of agency statistics because the agencies are not consistent across the board with what they categorize. But I think we get the idea of what we're trying to look at. And as Baker notes, we haven't even looked at civilian defensive footages yet, and we already see considerable variation between the FBI, the LAPD, and the NYPD. And it's difficult to compare categories if the cutoff footages and the categories are not all the same. It is not news to any of us why firearms-related statistics are so difficult to believe. Not all the parties are starting with the same numbers to make their case. So let's look at Baker's subheading, Engagement Distances for Armed Citizens. Quote, I'm always reluctant to draw conclusions for armed citizens based on law enforcement data anyway. Cops are supposed to find and apprehend violent criminals. Private citizens should be trying to avoid and break contact with violent criminals. Those stats include incidences where a cop already had their hands on a suspect to arrest them when things turned violent, or they were ambushed at a traffic stop. And those types of encounters would skew our numbers if we were trying to get an idea of what threats the law-abiding citizen might typically face, unquote. And that makes perfect sense to me. So as we learn from Guy Smith's book, Guns and Control, it's difficult to find comparable data from sources on civilian-involved defensive shootings. Now, Baker believes that there is anecdotal evidence suggesting that the range for civilians is typically 3 to 5 yards, 9 to 15 feet. And that seems acceptable to me. Baker says that firearms instructors who have studied this subject will often suggest numbers in that 3 to 5 yard range. Quote, for example, John Correa from the Active Self-Protection YouTube channel has watched thousands of gunfight videos, and he's mentioned the 3 to 7 yard range as most common. Claude Werner also known as the tactical professor, did an analysis of several years' worth of stories from the Armed Citizen column from the American Rifleman. His summary on distance was that the majority of incidents were slightly in excess of arm's length, unquote. Now, Baker tells us that Claude Warner has also been studying off-duty shootings by LAPD officers. And the reason this might be important statistically is that off-duty shootings might represent circumstances much the same as we armed citizens might find ourselves in. Quote, "These are people in civilian clothes being randomly targeted by criminals. Claude has found that nearly all of those incidents conform to the 3 yards, 3 shots, 3 seconds generalization." And we're going to go to our third and last break, and I will finish this discussion afterwards. So stay with us.
It's winter, so it's dark out. Go figure. LED Moose Lights literally save lives. At Auto Trim Design, our LED lighting specialists can help you find the best options and sizes for your vehicle. We carry all the lighting you'll need for a safe winter in Alaska, whether it's on your four-wheeler, snow machine, truck, or car. Don't risk your family's life in the dark. Stop by Auto Trim Design today, 2550 South Cushman, to protect yourself for tomorrow.
Life is the road trip we all travel. We're all on that road, moving one direction, forward. Even when road conditions may slow us down, still, we move forward. And the roads improve once again. Arctic RV encourages you, keep moving forward, because the road conditions will improve. Although Arctic RV is closed for the winter, they will reopen Monday, April 3rd. See you this spring. Travel, explore, camp, and enjoy the beautiful Alaska in comfort. Arctic RV, rough it in style.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies today with daytime highs approaching 5 above. Northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight, lows level off around 14 below. Chance for snow tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 1 below. Cloudy skies expected. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Laura Berkowitz with Shooter's Corner, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. Now, by the way, if you haven't been watching John Correa's active self-protection videos, oh, we have a caller. Okay, caller, you're on the line.
Hi, Laura. This is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
This comes from someone who's had a very arduous transition from iron sights to dots.
And who would that be? you're the voice of experience.
Although I don't have any empirical data to back it up in that I didn't run a timer on myself, it seems to me that I acquired the iron sight, front sight press that was beaten into me for years and decades.
Mm-hmm.
I can acquire the iron sights more quickly. However, on a recent visit to the range, I noted that I seem to be, again, with no timer involved,
mm-hmm.
I seem to be quicker on follow-up shots with the red dot.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and as I didn't have two guns of equal to each other in what I was doing, it's hard to make that comparison. But the dot seems more easily reacquired than the iron sight.
Yeah, you know, I guess I didn't spend very many years with iron sights before I moved to a laser because of my eyes. And then I shot bullseye for many years, and of course I used a red dot. And of course that isn't action shooting, but you still have to come down off the recoil. It's a 22, but you still have to come down on the recoil in some of those relays. And so I've been thinking about that for many years, and I think maybe the red dot, I already got used to that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. The coming back on the recoil, that second shot.
I also note that having practiced with the red dot, it seems to make my iron sight shooting a little bit better. So, I don't know if there's any analogy there to be drawn or not, but just my observation.
Well, no, and I appreciate that, and I hope you keep calling in with what you're learning and your observations, because the more I read about this, the more I'm finding a lot of different opinions out there. And so I think next week, if I can get to it, if not the week after, with Cowan's white paper, he's got the brain. If we understand the brain-eye connection, I think will help us understand physiologically what's happening, because we can't fight that. That's built into us.
I would submit that probably anyone who's thinking about getting into a red dot use that particular work by Cowan as a primer, because it covers a vast area, including the physiognomy of the human eye and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it does. And from a little bit of art background that I have, our eyes, we process information differently than if we saw a picture of that same information in a book. And so if we're target focused, we're observing and calculating that target in a completely different way than if we're front sight focused, I'm pretty sure.
And as another quickly occurring thought, one of the things in the transition that is difficult to overcome is the continuous movement of the dot as opposed to the movement of the iron sight.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
very difficult.
Yeah.
All right.
This is all great information. I've been thinking a lot about this ever since Chuck started talking about it, and I think it's a pretty deep subject, and the more, like, you call in and other people call in with their experiences, I think it'll help us gather information. Like I said, there's a lot of different opinions out there. I know I need these aids. I definitely need them.
You mentioned Chuck there. That brought something to mind from his show last week.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned quality of real leather holsters.
Yes.
I have a Milsparks Versamax 2, and I've had more than one friend comment on it being a work of art.
Oh, wonderful.
And if you don't do anything else, keep Chuck coming back, because he's great.
Oh, he is wonderful, and I am going to take his red dot class. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do his first one, but if I can't do the first one, I'll do the next one that he gives, because he knows his stuff. I'm really happy to have him in Fairbanks, and that he takes the time out of his busy life to teach the public. I think that's wonderful.
I look forward to your report.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. All right. Bye. Okay. So I think where I left off was, if you haven't been watching John Correa's Act of Self-Protection videos on YouTube, I think you're going to like them. I find them very helpful, and I do learn from them. They're rather addicting. Now, next, Baker, in his Lucky Gunner article, has a section titled Rangemaster Student Database. And Tom Givens, who runs Rangemaster Firearms Training, he's a well-respected and nationally known firearms instructor. And here's a quote from Baker. "The best resource that I'm aware of that has actual numbers I can put on a neat little graph for you rather than general impressions comes from Tom Givens, Rangemaster Firearms Training. Tom has been teaching defensive shooting classes for several decades. He keeps a database of all his past students who have been involved in shootings. The best place to find his most recent commentary on those events is in his book, Concealed Carry Class. So far, there have been 67 incidents with shots fired involving his former students. Three of those students were killed because they were unarmed at the time of the attack. The other 64 fought back and survived. Only three had minor injuries, and none of them were convicted of any wrongdoing." And the article has a chart with the Rangemaster statistics for the 67 incidents. In the larger picture, we're not dealing with much of a sample size, but at least the numbers here for Rangemaster represent trained concealed carry students. 4% of the shooting incidents took place from 0 to 2 yards. Two of those incidents also had physical contact. 87% of the shooting incidents were between 3 and 5 yards. 4% were at 5 to 7 yards. 4% extended from 15 to 25 yards. Now, The latter category, 4% at 15 to 25 yards, is 45 feet to 75 feet, and those are long shots. The West Freeway Church shooting in Texas I spoke about earlier, that was 25 yards, and the Indiana Mall shooting was at 40 yards. So I will buy Tom Gibbons' book, Concealed Carry, to see what more I can learn and share with all of you. And here's another quote from the author, Baker. Tom's explanation of these numbers is that most civilian incidents involve armed robbery or sexual assault. Violent criminals typically attempt to threaten and scare victims into compliance when they're still a safe distance away. That's outside of what most of us consider our personal space. Once it's clear the victim is going to do what they say, the attacker will move in closer, unquote. And then it's something that I had not thought of. If the criminal is threatening us into compliance, he may well stay at what he thinks is a safe distance. But as soon as we show we might comply, he might move closer into our personal space, giving us less time to react. And Baker notes that Tom Gibbons' statistics come from his former students who have had a solid training. So if we could look at statistics of the general untrained public who carry a firearm for protection, what outcomes may be different? And Baker thinks untrained defenders will be slower to react and that we would likely see more encounters in the 0 to 2 yard range. Now, Baker goes on to say that as we look at all the statistics we have, both civilian and law enforcement, though a flawed sample, if we combine them, the range of engagements is roughly between 3 and 5 yards. And he thinks we should prioritize for the 3 to 5 yard encounter. And I think we need to make our own decision what we prioritize for. But if you can accurately group your shots at 20 to 25 yards, you won't have a problem at 3 to 5 yards. And practicing part of your sessions at a longer distance will greatly improve your shooting accuracy and ability to acquire your target with speed. And that experience at 20 to 25 yards will give you the confidence if you're in a situation like the West Freeway Church of the Indiana Mall shootings, should you choose to get involved. Now, getting back to Baker's theories in his Lucky Gunner article, if the average incident we might encounter is 3 to 5 yards, he wants to answer his second question, and that is about the red dot sights. Are sights actually necessary or useful at 3 to 5 yards? And is using sights even feasible in such a short time frame, unquote? And I'm going to cover that information next week. And like I said, either next week or the week after, I'll start on Aaron Cowan's, from Sage Dynamics' latest white paper on miniaturized red dot systems for duty handgun use. And how much time do I have? Just a couple minutes?
A minute and a half.
Well, let me just talk about real quickly an incident that happened in Pennsylvania. This was in Fox News. Now, when I teach, I might have to finish this up next week because it's a pretty important. When I teach, I read the three safety rules and ask the students to read them along with me out loud. So let's go ahead and read them. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And then I ask the class, so I'm asking all of you, if you're in town using your gun for self-protection, is it loaded? Well, yes, because you are using it. If you are hiking through the woods and you have your bear gun holstered, is it loaded? Well, yes, because you're using it. If you are at the range target shooting, is your gun loaded? Well, of course, because you're using it. And then I say, when you're done in the woods and you get back to your vehicle, or you're done shopping in town and get back home, or you're done at the range and ready to case your gun, what do you do? And the answer in all those situations is you unload your gun, store your gun in a safe place with ammunition separately. And if you plan to use your carry gun or another gun for home protection, in class, we talk about those decisions and safety elements separately. That is another discussion. So I was dismayed to read an article in the Fox News that's dated December 28th, 2022, by Greg Wilson titled Pennsylvania Boy Accidentally Shot by Younger Brother. And what happened was two boys, one 10 and 11, with the other 11, and their older brother and their parents stopped by their father's aunt's house, and this was in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And the aunt's son, who is 24 years old, lives at that home, and he keeps two legally owned 9mm handguns in the basement. And here's a quote. The 24-year-old had been shooting recently, and the guns were not locked up, but instead were out of the lockbox because he was planning to clean them. And, folks, I'm going to give you more detail about this story next week. Just remember, always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. If you're done with your gun, unload it and lock it up safely. And I'll talk to you all next week.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.